Hey, Culture Hackers, it's Robbie Richman here with Jill.
Hey, Robbie, what's going on?
What's up? I'm so excited for this. Love podcasting.
Well, apparently you need a little rehab for all the mocha choca bullshit that you put into your body, right? Is that what's...
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
Jeez, we're really starting wacky today. This is a podcast with just Jill and I. We've got more guests coming up next, but this is where we're just going to riff about whatever's on our minds that we find really interesting about culture, business, and the world. You up for this, Jill?
Totally up for it.
Awesome.
Totally up for it.
Awesome. Cool. Well, as you know, I just got back from Vegas. And I got to say, you know, when I was there last time, it's really been pumped up as this big entrepreneurial city, and it is. There's a lot of ventures, and Tony Hsieh's doing the downtown project. You know what I think the next big hub is for startups? It's going to be huge.
Yeah. You mentioned it to me, but go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Detroit.
Does anyone want to live in Detroit?
But here's the thing, is like, it's got that kind of, you know, Seattle early grunge kind of feel to it, of that something is starting that's mm-hmm. big, and that it's got a real passionate community, mm-hmm. passionate community of artists and entrepreneurs. You can buy a house for nothing. So you can live a good lifestyle when otherwise you'd be just surviving on ramen in any other city.
So the good thing about the downtown Las Vegas project is you have someone like Tony Hsieh who's really throwing a lot of money, hoping that that starts to attract some interesting talent. What's happening in Detroit?
I've just seen these really cool web pages of these initiatives. They're putting like all this money into new startups that are going there, all these art initiatives. It just seems like the amount of passion and energy combined with how cheap it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just predicting right now that you're going to hear of a lot of really cool, innovative art and startups coming out of there, because it's going to be the really hungry ones. And they've got such a strong sense of community going that they're all going to be supporting each other.
So a little bit like the Berlin of the US, right? Just cheap, you know. Cheap to set up business, cheap to live, you know, still having a thriving art community. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
So, Culture Hackers, if you've got some big idea and you want to get a strong supportive community, actually reach out to me, robert@cultureblueprint.com, because I do have a friend on the ground there who's doing some really cool stuff and is hooked up with that community. So,
cool.
Yeah. But Vegas was good, and I caught up with Tony
Hsieh,
CEO of Zappos, and we debriefed on some of the holacracy stuff that's going on. And, you know, I've got to say, I've heard from my friends who've said that Tony's been really vulnerable and authentic on stage and said to the whole company that it's not all working and we've got to try some different approaches. And people have really felt that he's sincere in that. And and it certainly sounds like there's a lot to clean up. They haven't really figured out compensation entirely and all these other aspects. And I have to imagine that there's so much time going into figuring this out that I wonder what kind of drag it's going to have on the business itself.
Well, that was the other follow-up question I had for you, is what did you predict the kind of drag it was going to have in terms of just really trying to challenge the operation, right? And the flow. And so, you know, you've got activity that's just on a slump because people are trying to reestablish how
right.
they have dealt on a communication level, on a building some kind of rapport and building some kind of foundation in their own survival in the company.
What,
yeah.
Well, yeah. And the thing that really got through to him that I was telling him about was that, you know, the way these kind of changes work, it's 10 to 20% of the people who really drive it. And that the worst thing that you can do is try to make everybody do it. Instead, focus all the energy, resources, et cetera, on the people who are really getting it. And then they lead the way and other people want to do it if it works. And if it doesn't, then there's something to look at. But trying to make the entire company do it and penalizing people for not, I don't think is the right approach. And he seemed pretty open to that. So I think at this point, they're really open to experimenting as to what's going to work. And I'm curious, because I could seriously see it going either way. I could see this just tanking the company, just distracting from all work, profits and revenue going down. Or he could be on the next big thing. And I think what Tony's been known for, especially just even coming to Vegas in the first place, is gambling.
Yeah.
And this is a big gamble. And
huge
I think
gamble.
It turns him on from that angle.
Well, and putting all money on, you know, on X is like not just big gambles. It's like, come on board with this big decision. Everybody come on board with this big decision.
Right.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to keep on tapping into this and see what's going on. And we will keep abreast of that for all you culture hackers, getting the inside point of view. So I want to talk business models.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're working on...
Yeah.
You want to give your update first? Because last podcast, we were talking about you at Rhubarb, and where are you at right now?
So we're 2 weeks into the process. Mm-hmm. I keep calling it the George Costanza of companies, right? At least for me, right? It was do the complete opposite of everything you did before, and it will probably work.
What? What do you mean? Like, what have you done totally opposite?
Like, build agile, release an MVP, you know, all the things that you know to do. I mean, I got caught up in a melee of everything that could go wrong in a company. And I've said, here are all the lessons that I learned.
So good. It's like an MBA.
Totally like it. Here are all the lessons I learned from setting up the company to distribution of profits to slicing the pie before we'd raise money to going the big law firm route.
Right.
To expending lots of resources and energy and rebranding to, I mean, you name it, to building a product before we'd really tested it, then having to go back and re-engineer the entire product again. So every step I'm doing the complete opposite of, and I'm grateful because I think Rhubarb Studio, which we discussed on the podcast in some way, shape or form, is allowing me to do that from the product stage.
Yeah.
And it's been awesome.
Yeah.
It's been awesome. So I can say we're 2 weeks in, we're now starting to code. Wireframe's ready. We're ready to release this product, this MVP in 2 weeks,
so
which
cool.
is crazy.
Yeah.
And we've already started to be incredibly clear about what our value proposition is. And I don't think that we would have had that kind of clarity if we didn't go through this process.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
So,
well, you've already got a built-in audience for your product with all the listeners of Culture Hackers, and we're going to announce it, and they're just going to swoop up behind you.
They're going to swoop up behind me, and I'm mm-hmm. looking forward to it. Yeah. So no name yet, but next podcast we'll have one.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So I've just had such a recent fascination with business models of, my friend Joey Coleman turned me on to it, where he started to say, talked about this book, The Automatic Customer. Have you heard of it?
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. It talks about all these recurring revenue models
right.
of from Netflix to gyms to even car washes are doing it now, where it's this membership model. And it's funny to me because that's the original reason I was called into Zappos, was to create a membership site.
Interesting.
Yeah, but we threw that away to do all these events. And I think it's just so relevant right now because the technology is much better. The transparency is much more there. People really want to focus on the value as opposed to the transaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the I'm personally sick of it. Speaking where I just go in, I have a big speech, and then I don't really work with them again. I want to mm-hmm. create a real recurring relationship, and so I'm fascinated with this. There's this book, The Membership Economy by mm-hmm. Robbie Baxter, really good. Another one called Subscription Marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just been digesting all this. I might even do a speech on it because I think every business needs to start thinking of recurring revenue models to go from a transaction-based economy to a full relationship-based one.
Well, on the flip side, right, the whole notion of building a recurring revenue model, or at least in the gym's case, it's half of those people aren't going to come back again, and they're not even going to notice that it's debited from their account. So there is...
That's the dark side.
I hate to sort of lean in on the dark side, but
there's that. But I think that won't hold for a lot of other industries. A lot of other ones, this is going to hold you to the fire. That if people are going to pay every month, they're going to need to see value.
Right.
So you can't get away with it. I think about it like, you know, if you buy a car that you're really not happy with, you're kind of stuck with it for a while. Whereas mm-hmm. with a membership model, if you're not getting value every month, there is a big threat that somebody's just going to cancel it. And it makes you say, are we really?
But there's a tipping
value?
Point number in that regard, right?
What do you mean?
Well, you know, $7.99 comes out of your bank account every, you might not notice.
Right.
$135 comes out of your bank account once a month, you'll start noticing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And so, you know, it challenges you if you're at the higher level to really deliver a lot of value.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to a friend of mine about this, and she was saying, yeah, there are things that I've bought that I really love that I just never went back to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were talking about our healers, David and Heather at ZenRoseGarden.com. Amazing. And we were talking about them potentially moving into a subscription model. And my friend Holly said, yeah, I love it, but I don't always go back every month.
Mm-hmm.
So this would encourage you to. And I think I don't know. I guess this is my latest business pornography, really.
Yeah, go for it.
Just, you know, drooling over the business model. I was taking some notes. So you culture hackers who don't want to read all three books, I'll share with you some of the insights I've had, which are that everybody loves recurring revenue, for one. It's reliable. How nice is it to have reliable revenue? That there's data that you have there. By having people constantly interacting, you get to pull them. You have a relationship with them. You can upsell them. You can cross-sell to them other products and services, other people's. It just develops. I guess I keep getting obsessed with this word relationship, because I think everything is so networked right now. All these social networks, everything is networked together. And the companies that are going to have the strongest relationships with their customers are going to be the ones who win. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I talked about it before. The Habit Conference, did I talk about that?
No.
So the Habit Conference, I went up to San Francisco 2 years ago to this thing called the Habit Conference, which is, it's basically a bunch of developers who are trying to figure out how to make their games addictive, like literally addictive.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they just want that so badly, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, Vegas knows this better than anybody. If you go to the slot machines in Vegas now, notice when you play the slot machines that they make you feel like you're winning even when you're losing. Mm-hmm. They'll make the sounds and they'll say, you just won 60 cents, but you just spent a dollar. So you lost 40
but
cents.
But you need this idea of a quick reward has to happen.
The dopamine hit, the rush.
Yep.
It is. But it's so funny because they're all trying to engineer it. Mm-hmm. And everybody who went up there and said they did it, they didn't program it that way. It's like they reverse engineered their own business and said, oh, here's how we did it. Here's the model. But to program in this behavior, I haven't seen it really work. It's more like they discovered accidentally or they're focused on something else.
Did you read The Power of Habit?
Love The Power of Habit.
Yeah.
Love it. Great book. And, you know, the one guy who was so amazing, I'm forgetting his name. Jeez, I should really mention it. He's one of the original funders of Facebook and a bunch of other ventures. And he said, look, this is the thing you got to think about in terms of achieving mass success. And he said, stop thinking about growth. Mm-hmm. He said, there is one figure you need, and that's retention.
Retention.
It doesn't matter how small. You know, Facebook, you couldn't get on it at first. You needed to start small. And that this whole idea that people want to go big and grow and really, and how do we get the name out there? And how do we go fast? If you've got something good, you want to slow that down.
Look, I mean, I've said this to you. I'm in the world of mobile payments, mm-hmm. and anyone that is considered potentially a competitor in the restaurant space, that retention number, that reuse number, I have to tell you, the churn is something like 80, 90%. Someone uses it, pays, and then never goes back again. And that is the one thing that we are just laser focused on.
Yeah. Are there any tips you can share of how you're going to hack that?
We are trying to create, we're building a discovery engine before we're building our payment solution, right? Which is starting to tell the customer what they want, learn, understand, tell the customer what they want, and then end up telling them, and now you can pay for it, but really customize it so it becomes sticky for them, and creating all of these wins in the process as they're trying to discover what it is that they want, at least on the restaurant side. So quick wins.
Yeah. So how are you going to make this real as opposed to theoretical? Like once this MVP comes out, are you going to be like on the street with somebody watching them use it? Like how are you going to make this real?
It's a good question. Can I come back to it?
Because
I can tell you all about it, but I almost prefer to come back next week and give you and share with you some of our
comedic mistakes. Brilliant. Perfect.
And we'll be on the street with it. I'll be on the street.
One of those sandwich boards that have your app.
I personally will be doing that flip thing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like come over here and then it like points and it like drops on the ground. And I'm like, oh, by the way, here I have this app. Do you want to see it? Do you want to try it? Do you want to play with it?
I'll be like, Jill, you can't get the QR code when you're flipping that sign. I can't even take a picture of it.
I will not do any of those things. You will not see me on the side of like Pico and Fairfax doing that. Maybe
then,
you will.
Then you're not dedicated. I mean, if you're not willing to be out there semi-naked.
Ask me in 2 weeks. You don't know how much leg I'm willing to show. I might be willing to show a lot of leg.
You know, I think about it. Remember Bill Clinton when he first ran and in that the movie Primary Colors, they showed it where he's in the rain, you know, shaking hands with people as they're going to get elected. Just like he was willing to give everything. It was an amazing campaign.
Totally. Yeah. It's like the Katy Perry of campaigns, you know, like all bust up front. You like that analogy? Anyway.
I do.
I do.
But can I just say one thing?
Yeah, go for it.
Just because I thought it was the best case study. Do you remember in The Power of Habit when they talk about Febreze?
Yeah, but go ahead and say it.
Well, just that, you know, the original launch of the product Febreze was to cover up and mask smells, mm-hmm. right? To pet smells and, you know, dirty smells. But they realized the only way to really capture their user was that people love to spray Febreze after they'd cleaned a room. So it was this reward, right? They realized that almost like the habit of cleaning the room and to close that like experience was to spray Febreze. Yeah.
And they changed their audience from totally messy people to clean people.
It changed their audience. It changed all of the channels that they were, you know, communicating that message to. It changed their story. It, you know, it didn't change their product by any means, but that it was such an interesting thing that like the habitual behavior of a clean person is to say, and let me spray.
Right.
And it's true because I do the same thing.
Yeah. So your app is going to make your bathroom smell better?
Totally.
Oh, sweet.
On top of everything else. Well, we're the everything of everything, right? And then you can pay for it.
It's awesome. Yeah, I can't wait for you to go public with it.
Thank you.
It's going to be cool. So you had some things you want to talk about with business models. The last we talked about Uber and the independent contractor world and how we're developing this feudal system of class divisions and...
unfortunately, I had read an article and then I tried to find it because I sent it to you, which was this. So in addition to this notion of being a feudal class, you're actually looking at this feudal class who also has to think about their banking and cash flow decisions, right? So there was this great article about this bank, which is now, and they're working with Uber, they're not working directly with the individual. They're allowing the individual to get cash up front. In other words, they're getting a payout for a drive that they've done within a day as opposed to 15 days.
Right.
And it's so amazing that as you start looking at the entire ecosystem of this feudal class, then you have to build in sort of who's owning the cash flow, who's enabling sort of cash flow, because that's a big deal for a student who's driving and they're living off of that cash as opposed to waitressing, which is you get immediate cash.
Yeah.
Or a filmmaker who needs that cash up front.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just interesting to look at that ecosystem, right? And all the touch points of that ecosystem. It was just something that I was like thinking about. It's like I wanted to build an infograph of like who's your Uber driver in particular cities, right?
Right. And they always seem like great people. You know?
They're always great people, but you know, in LA, they're real estate, you know, they're in real estate or they're LA or they're directors in New York. They're, you know, just who is that person who is like underemployed that is just filling that underemployment with some kind of on contract, on demand service that they can.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. It's really cool. I still haven't gotten my Uber license. I've been thinking about trying that out and just from a cultural perspective and seeing what that's like.
Yeah. What are you going to do when you get it?
I'm going to keep my book in the back. My objective is to just learn, but also to make it a really great Uber experience. So I asked some friends, what makes it great? They're like, the small water bottles or the phone chargers, all kinds of different phone chargers. So you just plug in your phone as you're going there, you know? And I'd love to figure out what is the ultimate Uber experience to create for somebody, but also include my book back there to say, you know, if it's somebody who is at a company, like they might take a look at it and then we have a conversation with that. And it could be a lead driver.
Is there a way to do it without being super pushy? Because
That's exactly it. You just put it back there. If they make a comment, you right. talk about it. If they don't, you don't even bring it up.
Right. The other piece of the, if you just want to know, when Uber taps into my Spotify and I can choose what's playing in the car. Is,
they do?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just FYI, let people choose what they're listening to and not your podcast.
That would be hysterical. It's my voice on the stereo.
What are you playing, you narcissistic driver? Oh, this is my book and this is my podcast. You're not going to get any recurring revenue out of that. Just P.S. Just saying.
Good point.
Thanks.
Thank you. I'm going to write that down. You've got to tell me why this fascinates you. You're very fascinated with Pinterest's recent development.
Oh, Pinterest basically saying that they're now allowing you to push the I want to buy it button?
Yeah.
Well, I think you're right in saying I'm surprised they haven't done this sooner. I think everyone was surprised they haven't done this sooner. It's like, wow, finally Pinterest knows how to make money. And they've become the source of discovery. I mean, the go-to source of discovery.
Yeah.
So, I think the whole idea of being enabled to say, I want to build a recipe. Here's the recipe list. And I can also have it delivered in 45 minutes and I can have it on the table. It's kind of amazing to me, right? I mean, I clearly am interested in the world of instant gratification, right? Because right. I'm building a company that's all around instant gratification.
Yeah.
So I think Pinterest is really going to, like, Pinterest was absolutely at the right place at the right time with all of this incredible user data on what people's likes and interests are. And it's the how to spend it model, as far as I'm concerned, truly how to spend it. Like, you create this aspirational Pinterest board and you can say, I want to redecorate my entire house like this. And I can do it immediately. It's pretty amazing to me.
Right. And I wonder if they'll do the kind of, because what I love about Uber, of course,
how quickly are people going to go broke?
Right. Like, I wonder if they're going to set it up so that, you know, the thing I love about Uber is I don't take my wallet out.
Right.
You know, I just get in a cab and get out. Maybe when I hit that buy button on Pinterest, I'm not going to have to take my credit card out.
That's the problem.
It's just going to show up.
You're going to get a bitch slap statement, right? This is the whole psychology of, like, isn't this fascinating? I can have instant gratification. And yet I've just spent $5,000 on remodeling my home and I did it without even looking at a bill.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah. I think it's exciting. You're not excited? You're scared?
I'm scared and
excited.
You're scared
for yourself, like you're going to just buy all that stuff?
No, because that's not how I consume certain things. Like food, yes. Reservations and booking, yes. But my buying behavior is not akin to someone who would build an entire Pinterest board of lamps and desk tables and menus, yes. But I wouldn't buy something that was a ticket price higher than $100 like that. I'm notorious. It's quick gratification
for
me.
So what's on your next buy list? What do you want to buy?
Big buy list?
Anything.
You tell me and I'll think about it. What's on your buy list?
Ooh, what is? I just bought these fancy earphones that we're wearing. I'm liking these.
That the dogs ate?
Yes, that they ate and I replaced the wire from. But next, I've got an entire Trello board. Mm-hmm. If you haven't used Trello, you've got to check this out. Trello, Trello.com. It's an online Kanban board, which means you can move all these cards around. And I use it from everything from my to-do list, which has a to-do column, a doing, a waiting for, a done, an errands column. And I just move over the cards. It's the most fun to-do list I've ever had. But it's also a great kind of vision boarding tool or back burner kind of tool. And I have one list in there that's called Someday Maybe. And it's got all that kind of wish list stuff. So on that bigger side, there's certainly a flotation tank, sensory deprivation flotation tank.
I mean, your house?
Oh, yes.
You need Neverland Ranch for that.
No, they're not that big. I mean, you just need a room. You just need a small room.
Right.
And I mean, these things have gone down in price from, I mean, there's real expensive ones are still 20 grand, but talk about experiencing the culture of you. These tanks are just no vision, no sound, no feeling, no nothing, just pure. It's like, you know, when your computer gets all fakakta and you just reset. That's what this does. It's like you're hitting a reset button on your own body and mind and soul. And who wouldn't want that in their house? Right now, I got to drive all the way over to Woodland Hills.
I think the whole process of driving to Woodland Hills is a great one. You should drive, get a reset. You shouldn't have, like, that to me is putting narcissism in your house. You can see, I just feel it's so self-indulgent for me to like jump into this flow. I don't know why that to me.
Wow.
That to me would feel the most self-indulgent thing to have in my house.
I mean, we could really go into this here, Jill. I mean, I think this says more about you than the flotation tanks.
Maybe it does.
And your lack of self-indulgent, self-pampering, self-care that I think you need and deserve.
Oh, Robbie, that's super sweet. Super sweet.
I am narcissistic.
A little bit. But having said that, I would say the on my list is always experiences.
Okay, what's the next experience?
Japan.
Japan. What specific, like, where do you envision yourself? What's the picture you can paint for us? What's the cultural experience that you want to
have? Oh, it's like the entire getting hit, like my head being hit with like every taste, smell in Tokyo, and then like sitting in a temple in Kyoto, and but really like sitting in a bar in Tokyo to me sounds like what I a really incredible bar in Tokyo. That to me is like what I'm dying for.
Cool, like a Lost in Translation kind of scene.
Maybe.
So your email is richmund.jill@gmail.com. Okay, so if you want to take Jill to Japan,
richmund.jill@gmail.com. Yes, and I show leg.
Okay, so no promises, but you'll dress.
I'll show leg.
You'll dress
totally
very
show leg.
Okay, got it.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, happy to plug you. That sounded bad. I'm not happy. That sounded really bad. Happy to plug you. That just sounds weird.
Yeah. Can we change the subject?
Okay. Let's
flip the page.
This is getting uncomfortable. Another purchase that I'm really recently happy with.
Yeah.
Is my Hokas, my Hoka running shoes. Have you heard of these Hoka running shoes?
No.
HOKA. They're amazing. They're these Hoka. I had them before, but I didn't like them. But I got this new one that's been well reviewed by Runner's Magazine called the Hoka Clifton, and it's basically the exact opposite of minimalist running. Because with the minimalist, like these Vibrams that I have on, these five fingers, I love that for walking around. They're so grounding. But when I ran with these, I basically injured my knee.
Oh, I nearly broke my back. I mean,
right? Because
you saw that there was a lawsuit, right? You could have.
Really?
Did you see that? There's a payout now for. Wow. Yeah, you should might want to file something.
Incredible.
Yeah. All of the claims that Vibram has.
They had to just stop that.
Oh, absolutely. And also, I'm just saying, if you maybe want to get a little payout for your Vibrams.
I'm sure it'll be like 30 cents.
Right. I mean, I felt like my legs were broken.
Yeah. And so these are basically like having a mattress under your foot, like a mattress with some springy trampolines under it. And I've been running in them, and usually by mile one, my feet are hurting, and by mile three, my knees start to go.
Mm-hmm.
And these are just so well designed and so light that I don't feel it.
Those I'll buy.
Right?
I'll add those to my list.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I'll buy.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll take this offline because I'll add that to my Pinterest list or something. I'm just kidding. No, I'll just go straight to Amazon and make my life easier. Yeah. What are you eating? What are you drinking these days, Robbie? We always know that you have something up your...
Ooh. I've been experimenting more with the intermittent fasting where I don't always have like a breakfast, or I'll still do the Bulletproof here and there. I've been experimenting with, rather than Bulletproof coffee, Bulletproof yerba mate, which was quite the buzz and quite the drop off, I gotta say. And then Bulletproof matcha green tea, which was just nice. I didn't quite notice anything, but it was good.
Are you interested in going to my bone broth fasting?
Maybe. I definitely like the bone broth. I've been really liking bone broth. It tastes like it's nourishing on this deep soul level.
It is. And so I did do a 30-day like intermittent, so 2 days a week that I'd fast with bone broth, only bone broth. And I got to say, like, I don't really look for I don't look to cheat, right? I sort of feel like I don't believe in all of these mechanisms of cheating the body. Just eat good food, eat healthy, eat regularly, all of those things. But this was amazing.
Really?
Yeah, it was amazing. And so the whole idea is that, you know, like your skin looks better, collagen replenishment. I mean, I believe in...
Yeah. You know what I have really been noticing is the idea of emotional eating, and how I read this thing from the Cleanse Diet, I think it was, that said, when you feel a hunger come on really strong and immediate and you have to have it, then it's emotional.
Yeah.
Like that actual hunger comes on slowly. But if you get a sudden, and I've had that, and it's amazing to me how I just always have to be aware of it. It's like when I'm done with my email and I have to do a project and suddenly I have to have chocolate. It's like, I just have to. It's weird. It just feels it in my body, in my gut. And the thing that I know happens, if I fulfill on that, if I do it, if I go have the chocolate, I'll eat it. And you know what? Suddenly, I just don't feel that interested in the project.
Really?
I don't feel that passionate about it. You know what? I can do it later. And so now, well, like, if I'm conscious enough and if I have the willpower, what I'll do is I'll recognize it. I'll do at least a step or several on whatever that project is, and then notice if I still have the hunger, because oftentimes I won't.
Interesting.
So if I do, I'll do it. I'll just eat the freaking chocolate. But if when it comes on, just all of a sudden, like, whoo, it's not hunger, it's emotions.
It's totally emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'll eat that chocolate too. Which is why I recommend a 30-day cleanse so that you don't get that addictive behavior and that immediate rush, which is totally emotional.
Yes.
Just cut it off at the knees, so to speak.
Yes. Did I ever tell you when I did the love cleanse?
Oy vey. Okay, go ahead.
This is the cleanse of all cleanse. I learned it from Martin Masson Kipp of The Daily Love. I met him at a Tony Robbins event, and after we were hanging out and talking, we were both kind of coaching each other, and he's like, you got to do the love cleanse. And I literally, my hand gripped the table in fear because I just knew something really harsh was coming. And he said, this is how you reset, like the reset button on everything, really. But it gets you so in touch with your emotions. Because what you do is you clear out everything that you can distract an emotion with. So it was no sugar, no caffeine, no alcohol, no drugs, no sex, no dairy, nothing fun. No Facebook, no talking to crushes, no talking to exes, no flirting. That was an interesting one.
Oh my God, I did do that without being told. But... Go ahead. I just felt masochistic.
But this was 30 days of just not. And it's interesting to notice. Wait, I'm going to flirt right now, but then I don't. Or I want to talk to somebody who's a crush or an ex, but I don't. And I want to turn on the radio in the car, but I don't. Or I want to check Facebook, but I don't. All these things that are oftentimes a response to an emotion I don't want to be feeling, and oftentimes that emotion is boredom.
Right.
And what happened was all this. At first, anger came up. A ton of anger. That I was just like angry about everything. But by the second week, it was blissful. I mean, I would just, my biggest vice was really reading, and reading felt very active to me. It didn't feel like the book was reading me like TV mm-hmm. can do it to you. Like I had to actively work, for that entertainment. And it went so well that I even went beyond the 30 days. After almost another week of it, because I was just enjoying it so much. And then I've told other people, and without telling people to do it, several people have been like, I got to do that. And they did, and they loved it.
So how did you reintroduce anything into your life afterwards?
Slowly, and of course it all comes back, all of it.
Well, so then what's the benefits? I guess...
Because it's more of an awareness now.
It's an awareness.
It's definitely an awareness.
So like, resetting your intentions.
Yeah.
Sort of, right?
I mean, it's one of those things I think that we don't always get programmed as much as we get conditioned. And I think that, I'm conditioned in all these ways, but I have an awareness of it and something will flag me back. I'll be like, you know what? I'm checking Facebook a lot today and it's because I'm avoiding these other things I need to do. And, we all have the choice whether we go with it or we don't. I really, you know what I try to do? I deleted the Facebook app from my phone. But now I check it on the web browser.
Yeah,
all the time.
I've done that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did that too. It was really good for me.
It's good if you don't go to the web browser Facebook all the time, which I do.
At least you're reminded when you go. You're like, remember the reason why I deleted this? I'm bored. Yeah. I'm going to actively be bored on Facebook right now. At least there's something consciously that's happening, well, right? Instead of passively.
Yeah, and I think it helps if there's time constraints or something. I recently saw my healers, David and Heather, and they were saying, I was talking about how my mind went into this dark place, and they were saying, look, here's what you do. Set a timer for 5 minutes. Go as absolutely dark, depressed, sad, angry, whatever it is that you want for 5 minutes, and then it's done. It's over. Because he's like, if you don't, you go so deep that you'll just get stuck in that. And this idea of time boxing, I think, is really cool.
I got to tell you, one thing that Rhubarb Studios has introduced to my life is time boxing.
How so?
Everything that we do is totally built around, we do a stand-up, mm-hmm. it's time boxed. We do our business model canvas, it's time boxed. We've got 15 minutes, got to get up there, rapid, totally. Rapid, 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 and then it's done. And it's truly changed a lot of my behavior. It sounds so silly that I usually should time box things. You've got 90 minutes, you go and you take a break for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You've got 90 minutes, you're done, you take a break for 20 minutes. Really is changed my workflow.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I got to get more disciplined about that. And I think it applies in many different aspects. Like I was just talking about the Zappos training program to one of my clients. And I said, you're in this time box of 4 weeks of training where you get all the mentorship you need, all the support, answer any question, because you know after that you're going to be thrown into the field. So you have that 4 weeks to really learn as much as possible.
Right.
You've heard of the concept of the Pomodoro, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's an app for it, great, called Pomodoro. And I heard a guy who tested a lot of them out, He said it was something like 12 minutes on, 5 minutes off was his best. Hmm. But the one I've been experimenting with on the app is 25 minutes on, 5 minutes off.
Hmm.
And it's amazing. And it's amazing how much, like, you really have to force yourself to take that break.
You have to. It's for me. I have to force myself.
Yeah.
And I love that, like, our team is basically like, go take a break.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, what do I do? Should I go walk around the gym? Like, what? And you could just, I'm the one in the office space that is like the most reluctant to take a break, right? Like, everyone's like out and they're totally in it. And I'm just like, I don't know what to do with myself for 20 minutes.
Totally.
But it's great for, and I think it's really good for me, and it's super productive.
It is.
Yeah.
I think I need to get a Sharpie and write it on my hand. Like,
time box.
Yeah. Or Pomodoro or something. Or maybe I need to write several things on my hand, because sometimes these things just come down to a lack of memory. Like, I was coaching this guy who's the client in Vegas, and he was talking about how they set all these goals and then they don't accomplish them, or they'll accomplish like 30% of them. And he said, he's, as the leader, he's so frustrated. Why don't we get more done? Why don't we complete these? I want more. I want these done faster. And I said, where do the goals live? And he says, in this software program, and he starts talking about this software program that's behind this closed wall of this thing. And I'm like, so your goals live in this place where people barely even see them. And I said, you got to literally put them on your walls and put them in a place, and even like a Kanban style, that shows it's not done. And for a visual reminder, every single day that you see that, like, it reminds me about how Mark Zuckerberg, when they got their new Facebook office, he tore down the ceiling tiles, and like, they pulled out some wires and stuff so you could see everything, because he said, I don't want anybody to get the feeling like we're done.
Totally.
You need to always have the feeling like we're not done.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely spot on. Yeah. We'll see how this, I mean, look, it's, and the fact that we're building a product and it has to be ready in the next 2 weeks, come hell or high water, with a very clear time box. This is not a false alarm.
Right.
Has been incredibly productive to all of us.
Yeah.
And very clear goals, in very clear focus.
Yeah.
It sounds so obvious.
Well, it is, in the sense too that, like, people discover this naturally. Like, you hear about somebody suddenly having twins. You know, and they have like no time, but they have to get all those same things done, and they do, because they have to. But, you know, there's that rule of project management: the task takes up the amount of time allotted to it.
Right.
So when that person allotted 2 hours from an 8 hour day to two, he got it done.
Right.
And, you know, I remember this woman I knew in Vegas who was an Air Force pilot. I asked her, what's the most surprising thing you learned in the military that you wouldn't have expected before going into it? And she said, without skipping a beat, that there's so much that you can get done in 30 seconds.
Hmm.
And that blew me away. Like, whoa.
Interesting. Wow. Well, we're going to have to do a 30-second podcast once.
That would be interesting. Like, maybe we could record one and then have it sped up really fast, and you get it on in 30 seconds. And, and we believe that your mind will take it in. And even though you can't remember any of it, you really did hear of it. And suddenly you start time boxing. You're like, well, I'm time boxing now. I don't even know why.
Yeah. Done. 30 seconds. Next one.
Cool. Well, we've got, are we going to have the growth hacker on for future podcasts?
I think we should. I'm going to ask. I think I'd like to get the growth hacker on.
We're going to have a growth hacker on. Next is also going to come up some of my high school friends who are now in Hollywood producing. I haven't talked to them since high school when we were messing around on the newspaper together. So that should be an interesting, fun conversation. And as always, more of the episodes and notes are on culturehackers.com. Please go to iTunes and rate us, or tell a friend and share it, or just, hey, tell us what you think. We don't even know you guys. Like, we can't tell who you are. This is way different from...
Yeah, and let me just, one big plug. Yeah. I was at the NRA conference, the National Restaurant Association conference. I always have to be explicit.
Right.
And this is a shout out to the Reserve guys. Thanks for reaching out to me. I didn't even know you were listening to me. So please let us know who you are.
Yeah, seriously. Like, we'll run into people and they'll just say, oh, we listen to the podcast. And it can be really surprising. So I'm Robert at cultureblueprint.com. Jill is richmund.jill@gmail.com. Let us know who you are. Let us know what you think. Let us know if there's things you hate about it. Anything. We're just so open to the feedback, and we're grateful that you're here with us and listening.
And have a good day.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Robbie.
Thanks.
Bye.